The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Over the last 18 months, financial institutions, including a lot of online bank alternative platforms, have reported an overwhelming surge in suspected fraud offences. And it means that there are now tens of thousands of cases remaining unprocessed. Paul Dwyer, CEO of Cyber Risk International and President of International Cyber Threat Task Force, joins me now. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Anton.
Paul, the nature of the threats that people face, can you give us a sense of the most common ones?
Okay, so we're pretty much getting them from all angles on any form of communication we have, whether it's email, texting, whatever it happens to be. These guys, the bad guys, if you like, are working at volume and pace, using innovation, using AI, and leveraging all the different kinds of technology they can to up their game and to scale. And that's why we're seeing a lot more of it as well at the moment.
Now, do they target the technology or do they target the person? As in, do they try to lure you into giving up passwords or giving up details, or do they hack accounts?
It's a little bit of both, but generally the weakest link tends to be the human, and they're the last line of defense as well. So they'll go where people go. That's what criminals do. So they'll be on social media. They'll be on anywhere that they can get open source intelligence. They can go from LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, whatever it happens to be. And they're trying to garnish as much of this artifacts of information they can, so they can collate that information and they can create a profile on you and they can start using that information to carry out whatever the various scam is.
Can you give us an example of one of the ones that you would have seen in action recently?
Well, we've seen a lot, especially in Ireland, around, for example, investment scams and around cryptocurrency. So they're plugging in here to the, if you like, the greed or the FOMO that people are getting when they feel, oh, I didn't get into cryptocurrency. And people are starting to research this topic, and then they'll see maybe some influencers and then who are saying which cryptocurrency to go for. And what will happen is that we've seen that these influencers' websites themselves have been hacked. They put up false comments on those to influence people to go for a particular scam or particular scheme that's being offered around cryptocurrency. And there's been a lot of that. And those kind of criminals, they're looking to get, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 at a go. They're not looking to steal $100 or a couple of hundred euros out of somebody's account.
And are they getting those kind of sums?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why they're doing it. They're doing it because they're successful at it. The economy itself, the underground economy, is estimated
to pass. People will see something online, click on it, and then send that individual a 20 grand investment. What they think is a 20 grand investment.
Absolutely. I mean, this happens, you know, it's not an immediate response where somebody will groom them effectively. The criminal, the bad actor will groom them for a period of time. These are intelligent people that will fall for these things, often business people, that will be convinced because they'll have done what they consider their own research. They'll come across a third-party website that says, oh, yes, this is a great investment and look at the returns I've got. But that's actually fake information. It's misinformation that's been put out there. And these criminals are, as I say, well-organized. They're well-funded. And they're able to spend weeks, months, and even years on some scams to build up that ecosystem that when people start searching in Google or other search engines, they will find relevant information and they'll convince themselves that this is a good opportunity.
If you get stung in one of those, you know the way there are certain protections with credit card companies where you can do a charge back if you don't mm-hmm. get the service or if there's a problem. Are you similarly insured online? Is there any recourse if you get stung?
You've got certain protections by using credit cards. But what you'll find is, you know, if you're transferring funds, you know, you're generally not going to use a credit card to send 5 or 10,000 into an investment. So if you're transferring funds, you're in a whole different ballgame because you don't have the same kind of protections. Or if you're using debit cards, you don't have the same kind of protections.
So the people who are doing this, is this state actors? Is this individual criminals? And are they domestic or are they foreign?
There's a bit of everything in there. But what you'll find is that the OCG groups, the organized criminal groups, they are state sponsored or state harbored. So you'll find a lot of them, for example, will hang out in the likes of Russia. They'll be protected by Vladimir Putin. He would use them for his own gain when he wants them to do favors and do things. And there's sort of these unwritten rules where as long as they don't go after Russians and they don't go after his friends, then they can stay there and be harbored. And, you know, we've seen these warnings come out where the geopolitics of this, you'll see around things like, you know, the Ukraine war and even the group that attacked the HSE and took down the HSE, the Conti ransomware group, on the day that Russia invaded Ukraine, on their website, they put up a notice saying that they alleged all support for Vladimir Putin on that day. This is a company, by the way, Anton, that is run like a tech startup. They have 60 staff. They turn 160 million a year, and their business is ransomware. They want you to click on an email to install this malware onto your network, and then they will hold all of your data at ransom. And effectively, it's a kidnap of data and resources that people have.
You talk about clicking on links in emails. What are the most common mistakes then that people get trapped by?
It tends to be they want you to click on something or install something on your device. What people are falling for, it tends to be texts, because when you think of it, you've got your trusted mobile phone. It's probably beside your head while you're asleep. You wake up blurry-eyed. People are going to make mistakes, and they're going to click on links that look accurate. And it takes a lot of different things to protect us from that. One is that individuals have to take a certain amount of responsibility. They have to up their game in relation to their knowledge and the care they're taking. I would call that cyber hygiene. They need to make sure they're putting the updates on their phones and their devices and so on. They can't put it all down to law enforcement or on Garda Síochána or on the bank to protect them from these kind of scams. We all have a part to play here.
So best practice for an individual looks like what?
Trust but verify is generally what it comes down to. I mean, you know, we have to be very careful what we're doing. If something seems out of the ordinary or something seems too good to be true, the same rules in the digital world apply in the physical world. And if somebody's offering you something that's too good to be true in the physical world, you'd probably walk away because it seems too good to be true. So if you're getting the same kind of offers online, you really need to be careful. And if
some of it very insidious, Paul. I mean, the too good to be true, you get scams where you say, oh, you've gone through the M50 and you haven't paid your toll. Now, that's the kind of thing where almost made you go, oh God, I must have forgotten. And you will click that and send it without necessarily thinking, hang on a minute, is this real or is this illegitimate? If you are being pursued for a direct debit that has failed to your broadband supplier and they say, you owe us 200 quid for a missed bill, it's very difficult in those kind of contexts to say, hang on a minute, do I need to go back and try it? And even if I do want to verify, how do I verify? Because in a lot of the companies that you'd want to ring, it takes you the rest of your life to actually find a human to say, that isn't us.
I totally agree with you. I mean, it had that. That's the part that you know, those kind of providers have to pay. They have to up their game and make it easier for people to verify these kind of transactions. There's no point in, for example, a financial institution putting out messages saying we will never text you, because they do text people and they do email people looking for information from time to time. So there's a lot more can be done in that space, because I agree with you. I mean, that's why those players in that space, that those cyber criminals, are getting away with that, because often people go, oh, it's a tenner or it's 20 quid. I couldn't be bothered putting all the effort into trying to get that back or whatever, and they just move on. And that's why these guys are being more and more successful all the time. So there's a lot more can be done.
The other thing that happens regularly, and I want your view on whether or not consumers actually respond to it, you will get these messages from various different providers that say, your password has been part of a data breach, therefore you should change it. And you look at it and you say, I have 18 separate accounts that are all based on a password. I have to use the one, because otherwise I won't be able to remember what the other 17 are. And the notion that I would change it every 3 months would mean that I'd have to remember 365,000 passwords by the time 3 years has passed. Not a chance of it happening. So why do they ask you to do things that the average person is demonstrably not going to do for practical reasons?
Okay, so this gets into that piece I mentioned about responsibility, and is all taking part in that. Password is only one line of defense. Most of the organizations, when you log into them, they've already picked up on 15 or 20 identifiers on your machine to know it is you. They know the operating system, your IP address, all those kind of things. So it is only one of the layers of things. But in relation to that, and I talk about education, is that people should be using things like password vaults, where you can maintain different sets of passwords. Because when something does go wrong, Anton, and often does, people don't want to have used the same password on 15, 20 different accounts, because if the bad guy gets that one password, they're into everything. And the most
precious...
And
how do they know what are the other ones to go into? So let's say they get your password for your Amazon account. How do they know what other accounts you have that they can then use?
Well, they will try all of the major food groups, if you like, in relation to that. So, for example, if they got a Paddy Power account, they will then try all of the other gambling sites to see, are you actually on another gambling site as well? Because, you know, people are creatures of habit and they've been the same side of things. So if somebody's in an online shopping site, they will try and all the other online shopping sites as well to see if you're in the major ones as well and try and get in those. So if you're using an email address and a standard password, they will try that as a combination on most of the key things. So when you think of your social networks, if you're using the same username and password on TikTok, Instagram, X, whatever, they're going to try it on all of them. They're going to try that as a way to access the door. I will add one point in this, Andrew, which is really important. One of the holy grails of this is your personal email account. And for many people, that's like a Gmail account or something like that. And we use that as the account to reset passwords. That's the most precious account. And that's the account that the bad guys want to access. Because if they get access to that one, they can reset all your passwords in every other system. So you need to make sure two-factor authentication, at the very least, is on that. And two-factor authentication takes seconds to set up on an account. It's free on most platforms. And it will protect people, not totally, but it will protect them to a major, major level.
You mentioned the other information that they get to cross-reference with your passwords, like your IP addresses, your operating system. Is there any additional protections that you can use, like a VPN? Is there any way to hide your IP address? Is there any way to hide your operating system? Should you be trying to make yourself more anonymous online?
You can do that, but I wouldn't think for the general person that they're going to go to all of that effort. What I would say is that if you're using public Wi-Fi, absolutely use a VPN. If you're using a free Wi-Fi, then somebody that's on that can actually sniff everything you're doing if it's not encrypted and watch and read everything that you're doing on your device. The other big area here where people are becoming vulnerable is what we call IoT, Internet of Things devices. These are the devices that you buy that are internet enabled. You bring them home.
You can no longer trust your fridge.
You can't trust your kettle, your weighing scales, anything, because these devices have little to no security built into them. They all generally use the same username and password. And if they're on your home network, then and they're compromised, then that bad guy is on your home network and they can see everything else on your network.
In terms of prosecutions in relation to this, I talked about the backlog that already existed. Given what you say about how much of this is overseas, is there any prospect of the people who do these kind of criminal fraudulent acts? Is there any prospect of them getting caught by the Irish Guard or prosecuted at all?
Well, the Irish Guards play way above their weight division in relation to cybercrime on a world stage. They've many successful campaigns working with Europol, but it is a whack-a-mole game. I mean, the bad guys have so much resources. They are so well organized, and then with state sponsorship and protections as well, it is a difficult game. And what crime does not have a digital or cyber element to it now, from kidnap to murder? There's digital devices involved. So there's a huge strain upon law enforcement, generally speaking, to deal with this. And then when you look at even the pay rates of law enforcement or on the guards compared to what they'll get in the private sector working for a cybersecurity company, that churn of staff and talent and everything else of that is a real factor. So law enforcement agencies around the world, and the guards are no exception, need more resources.
One final thing, by the way, what's the story with demographics in respect of this? Who are the people who are most likely to get caught? Is it the younger generation who just take tech for granted because they grew up with it? Is it the older generation who may be less familiar? Who tends to get stung?
Okay, so the answer to that would depend on what the bad guy's trying to do. So we could be talking here about predators who are after children. So therefore, the children are the ones that they're going to target and would likely to fall for it. Who fall for monetary scams tends to be people who need money more. They're online and they're trying to make a quick buck or go into an investment or do something where they think they can make money really quickly. And they're easy prey. Also, the lonely are the ones that will get hit as well. Those looking for love or looking for relationships online. Anyone who has an emotional side to them that is online, whether it is for money or is for love or partnership, whatever they're looking for online, they are easy picking for bad guys. And those romance scams, they'll take 6 months grooming someone, and they're the ones that on average they'll get about 30,000-40,000 out of somebody over that 6 month period.
On average,
yeah. I mean, the money they're making, the figures on this, the latest figures for 2025, they expect it to pass $10 trillion as an economy. So that puts it just behind the United States, China, and then we have the cyber criminal economy worldwide.
So does that
and
mean
after
then,
that you
Paul,
have Japan,
when you know. You describe it, the economics of it, does that mean that we shouldn't be thinking of this as some scammer who's having a go? This is almost like a 9-to-5 job. You arrive into the office, you sit down, you log on, and you begin your day of scamming, and then you go home at the end.
100%. I mean, these guys, like I mentioned, the Conti ransomware group, they're a startup with 60 staff and turning 160 million. I mean, they go to work, they have incentive schemes, they have days out for morale, for the staff, everything else like that. They are run absolutely like tech startups. And they're very, very, very wealthy. A lot of these organizations, like one of them there had 15,000 Bitcoins. So that's about 1.5 billion sitting in a wallet. So, I mean, they don't have the same issues around governance, oversight, and legal issues and challenges when it comes to, you know, using innovation and so on. So they will invest heavily into campaigns and technology using AI, voice cloning, face cloning, deepfakes, all these combination of things. They're getting the best of the best working for them as well. They're essentially entrepreneurs. And they're innovators, and they will take risks and they'll invest. And all cyber criminals, the return they want is money. If the threat actor is a nation state, they may want an economic advantage, or they want to destabilize a government with disinformation, whatever it happens to be. If it's a threat actor like a predator, they're obviously after something else as well. But the days of, you know, somebody sitting with a toga, eating pizza, eating Smarties and all that, and hacking away, they're gone. If the people who are making the big money at this are the organizers, almost project managers, business people, and they're able to organize, and they will rent tools and rent people in this distributed economy that we refer to as crime as a service. So if I want to carry out a ransomware campaign, I don't need to be a hacker. I don't need to be technical. I can hire the tools to do it, and I can hire the people to send out the phishing email. I can hire them to write it, and I can hire somebody to launder the money.
It's a worrying environment in which we live, Paul. Thank you so much for that. That's Paul Dwyer, CEO of Cyber Risk International and President of the International Cyber Threat Task Force. Oh, by the way, Paul, before you go, there's a cyber threat conference coming up. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. On next Thursday and Friday, the 16th and 17th, we are actually holding a conference in Dublin. It's the EUCybersummit.com, EUCybersummit.com. And at that, we've over 1,000 people coming from all over Europe, because there's a new regulation coming in from Europe called the Digital Operation Resilience Act, which is to protect the financial sector across Europe.
Well, enjoy, and I hope it goes well. Paul, thanks again.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.